Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Brown Sports Convos podcast. My name is Ethan Jobson, and with me today I have a very special guest. You know that as Brown Sports Convos, we always like to stay plugged into Brown Sports, and with me today is I think one of the best athletes in Brown Sports today. She is a first team all Ivy recipient. She has a two-time Ivy player of the week. She led the Ivy League in save percentage. There are literally so many accolades here that I can't name them all, but those in the know probably know who I'm talking about. This is Kayla Thompson, who recently completed her career as goalie for the Brown women's soccer team. So Kayla, I would just give you the floor. Is there anything you want to tell about yourself?
Yeah, it's always funny listening to the accolades. I'm like, oh, I guess I did do those things. Yeah, that's me. Yeah, it's an honor to be here. You know, playing for Brown has been such like a life-changing experience for me. And yeah, I look forward to just sharing about it, chatting about, you know, what made things possible for me and what I hope for the future of Brown and women's soccer and all of the things.
All right. Yeah. So that's great to hear. That's great to hear. I guess I could just go chronologically. You're from Texas, right?
I am.
And you started your college career at West Virginia, and then you eventually transferred to Brown. Is there anything you can just take me through that process? What led to your decisions? You know, it's just very different environments. I guess what led you here?
Yeah. So the rules have changed from when I was a young player in club soccer and high school soccer, or middle school soccer, all those things. There was like no protection pretty much for students or like children really, like when pursuing college. Mm-hmm. The only real rule was that you can't take an official visit until your senior year of high school. Mm-hmm. Which means that the school pays for everything. Like they pay for your flight to the school, they pay for your meals, they pay for you either stay with current players or they put you up in a hotel and normally you watch a game and they take you out to dinner. That's like everything that entails an official visit. But besides that, there were so many loopholes. You can commit, honestly, you could commit as like an 8-year-old. There's like no rules saying you can't commit as an 8-year-old. So I had friends who started getting offers in 8th grade. And then most of my like close friends were committing like freshman, sophomore year of high school, which like you're barely figuring out what classes are interesting to you. Like you're still finishing up all those like core requirements of high school. You might know that, you know, history is your hardest class, but you have no idea what you want to study in college. Right. Like you barely know what you want out of a university, and people are, you know, signing away the next 4 years of their life. Mm-hmm. And so I felt a lot of pressure as my sophomore year came to an end, seeing so much, like more than half of my team had committed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh yeah, I also, for me to feel that I was, you know, as good as them, or that I was the player that so many people said that I was like, I need to commit to show that. So I was really focused. Like I literally would pull up every, you know, month or two, I'd pull up the top 25 schools. I'd be like, that's my top 25 choices. Like it's every school under the sun. You know, you have Stanford on there, you have UNC on there, you might have what West Virginia was on there. You know, you have teams in all sorts of, you know, weather environments, all sorts of conferences, all sorts of like academic environments, all these things. But I was like, these are the schools I'm looking at. And started working my way down and being like, okay, there's already four goalkeepers at Stanford. Like, there's not really a place for me there. Or, you know, email UNC, don't hear back from UNC. Okay, I guess I'll cross them off my list. Like, can't go there. And then I had a friend who went, or she would have been committed. She was 2 years older than me. So she would have been committed to West Virginia. And she was like, you should check out West Virginia. Like, I really like it. It's a like hardworking team, like not a lot of superstars on the team, but a lot of just like really hard workers who come in, earn their spot. And you know, it's a college town, but facilities are amazing, things like that. I was like, sure. So I went on a visit and they had like kind of rolled out the red carpet. They had a bunch of like championship rings from winning conference seasons and like a fairly new, I think it had been built in like 2010 or 2012. So like a fairly new soccer facility, their own practice field, just like so many nice things. And I was like, oh, this is really nice. Like, I really feel like I'd be like a superstar here, you know, have so many things, like free food and like everything you could ever want, as a 16-year-old. And so then a few, probably like 6 months after that first visit, I ended up committing, on like mostly academic scholarship, and then like with the potential to earn like the last cut, like bit of money, athletic scholarship when I got there. And then I got there and like the fitness tests are, I haven't heard of a school that has a harder fitness test than West Virginia. Like there's three fitness tests. Like most play, like I think like maybe five players pass all three. And then
wow,
some, you know, after that, maybe like 10 will pass two. And then like a few, like 10 more will pass only one. And then some will pass none. It's just like super rigorous. Like that blue collar working mentality is like ingrained in the fitness test as well. So that was my first time that I had to like really grind, like really, really work, push my body to like limits I had never thought I would have to do. And you know, there was some things that I really enjoyed about it. I made some like wonderful friends. I did pretty well academically. It was weird because my like the athletic environment is pretty diverse, but then I would go to like STEM classes and literally see no Black people.
Yeah.
So yeah, go ahead.
No, I totally get that. I'm from upstate New York. That's where I went to. It's where I am now. It's where I went to high school. Not the most diverse place in the world. It's kind of the middle of nowhere. So I was actually going to ask about that. This kind of brings me, I saw that you had collaborated on a project called Black Future while at West Virginia.
Yep.
You just had talked about, by the way, I'm also an Africana major.
Oh, nice.
You talked about that we've seen each other before at like Black Student Union meetings.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess, could you go more into how that has informed your experience as an athlete and a student at these very different places?
Yeah. So they had like managers, like student managers who would come to our practices and like help setting up the field, filling up water bottles, you know, just like miscellaneous things to help practice run smoother. And one of the managers, his name was Pache, and we kind of got to know each other chatting at practice, and I would kind of see him around and be like, what's up? So I had written a poem and posted it on my Twitter. And he followed me on Twitter and was like, oh, I saw that you posted this poem. And my friends and I are trying to work on this project called Black Future. At this point, like, it was just an idea that they had. And he was like, we really want to, you know, uplift like Black people show, you know, Black excellence, and so much of Blackness is talked about, like, in the, like, atrocities of the past. So just, like, dreaming about, like, what could be in the future for Black people, and, like, how we can leverage all the, like, excellence in the Black community to create a better future. I'm like, okay, that sounds dope. I'm in. And so they asked me to write a poem for their project, because the rest of them are photographers. So they were mostly focused on, like, capturing, like, really incredible images, and they wanted a poem to kind of tie it all together. So what I had done is I went with them to pretty much every photo shoot, and we'd have a good time, take pictures, whatever. And then at the end, I'd bring everybody in, and I'd be like, talk about what Blackness means to you, or, like, what you love about being Black. And then I just, like, would head down, like, take notes on everything that people were saying. And the poem that I wrote was, every word in that poem was from those conversations. So I just had taken quotes from different people in the photo shoots and, like, tied those together into a poem. And we ended up creating kind of like a montage of, like, images with poetry, and which is really amazing. And then we were like, we should do this again. Like, this should be a yearly thing. So the pandemic has made that a little bit hard, because that would have been, the pandemic would have been, like, the third year. The second year we did, like, a Black Joy, which was, like, at the beginning of the pandemic. And we, you know, do what we can, but everyone's working and things like that. But yeah, so that has really helped me, because I also grew up in a really white area. So that has helped me, like, discover my own Blackness and, like, learn what that means to me and make it my own, and also, like, grow a community in a place like West Virginia, where that was really hard for me in my first, like, year and a half.
Mm-hmm. So where did you grow up, actually? I'm curious.
Austin, Texas. Right. And so, like, Austin is fairly white, but, like, there's definitely, like, pockets of mostly, like, Latinx people, but there's also pockets of Black people. But I lived in, like, a super white suburb, like, 10 minutes outside of downtown Austin.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I don't want to extrapolate between two experiences too much, but I remember my freshman year, we interviewed Shayna Mehta on the basketball team. It seems like a long time ago now. I mean, it was, but I remember she was just talking about, yeah, being like one of the only, like, South Asians in women's basketball. So I think bringing it back to, like, the fact that you eventually came to Brown, I guess, how did it feel, since I think Brown women's soccer team is, like, one of the more diverse teams I think I've seen. How did it feel to come to that experience after your past experiences, I guess?
Yeah, so it's weird, because for me, sports has always been where I have diversity. So, like, gotcha. My high school was white, but my club team was, like, half and half. Same thing, West Virginia, my classroom experience and, like, day-to-day life was, like, around a lot of white people. My team was, like, at least a third Black, if not more. And then, you know, similar at Brown, where, like, yeah, I think the diversity level on the soccer teams is pretty comparable between Brown and West Virginia. Mm-hmm. But when you look around in the Ivy League, I think that's probably, like, where you're, like, if you've been coming to Brown games, like, the other Ivy League teams are super white. So, yeah.
Sorry. No, go ahead. Interrupt you. Just to be clear, it's easy, I feel like, for, like, Brown to, like, turn up our nose at, like, West Virginia, but it's not like Brown is hardly the most diverse place either.
It's interesting. Soccer is a white sport. Fundamentally, it is a white mm-hmm. sport, because it does cost a lot of money to play club, and mm-hmm. You're not, like, your most diverse sports pretty much are going to be, like, basketball, where it costs very little to play.
Mm-hmm.
But Yes, I think it's been changing a little bit, like when I was younger, teams were like more white, but like as I've gotten that happened like before I got into college, but some teams, like you can still look around and see that some Ivy League teams, BYU were just runners up in the national championship. They have, I think, no Black people, maybe one Black woman on their team. Like there's still teams that are not diverse at all. And especially when you look at coaching, I think like the coaching is the biggest indicator, because you can always bring in Black players. I think like that's the first thing of change. It's like bringing in, you know, athletes, but then having coaches and like staff and, you know, people in leadership positions that are people of color, that's very behind. Like Kia is one of, I think, two or three Black female head coaches in the country.
Yeah, I mean, we see that in so many sports, but I actually did want to ask, was there any impact that Kia being there had on you coming to Brown?
God, so many things. It's hard because there's like so many unset, like that's, I think it's like having someone in the room who just like gets it, particularly like going to the pandemic and like George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, like, you know, all of those things. It could have been much more laborsome if I didn't have like a Black woman leading my team. Mm-hmm. And of course that means like for her in the athletic department, I think a lot of labor falls on her.
Mm-hmm.
But for us as players, like there's a lot less that I have to carry as a player, because like my coach gets it and like my coach is doing the work, and that just like makes my life so much easier.
That's great to hear.
Yeah. So I think like she didn't come here to, she came here to be a soccer coach, but like part of like being a Black woman in a white dominant space is like you also carry that, the burden of race and doing that work. And in doing that, she's made our life as like Black student athletes easier.
Of course. Kayla, just looking through my questions, you keep beating me to every topic I want to bring up. I was going to ask about how it was with the Ivy being off during the pandemic, and also, of course, everything that happened in 2020 with Black Lives Matter and every other things. Given you're a person that like soccer is a big part of your life, how was that as an adjustment?
Yeah. I mean, we were, it's hard coming off a championship season, and like, we feel like we were building momentum. We lost a few seniors. We lost four seniors at the end of the 2019 season, but to be a championship winning team and losing four seniors, like you feel pretty good about the next season. So we were really excited to build on that momentum. It hurts having that taken away. Fortunately, like I chose to stay. I took a semester off so that I would, because I had only had like one semester at Brown before the pandemic hit. So I was like, I'm not giving up that easy. Sorry. But yeah, it was super difficult. I was struggling to like build community at Brown. Cause like my friend, like my world was soccer. Like for the fall semester, my world was literally soccer. And then spring, I was like, now I'm going to go out and like, you know, make ties with the community, get to know other people at Brown, and then pandemic. So that was hard for me as an individual in terms of like feeling like a sense of belonging at Brown and like establishing a community outside of soccer. But our team, we did a fundraiser because we wanted to do something. So many people were like posting Black squares and making their like statements that Black Lives Matter, and we wanted to do more than that. We felt that a lot of them were like disingenuous. And so we wanted to like have an action piece to that. So we put together like a workout for Black Lives Matter thing where athletes, because we were all feeling this, like our sports have been taken away from us. So athletes could participate, get their families and friends to donate money for their participation in doing this like 8 minute, 20 second workout. And that included information on like 8 of the hundreds of thousands of people who have lost their lives to, you know, police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
In this country, but it was like an educational as well as like an athletic challenge. And we raised $28,000, I think, for
great.
The NAACP Legal Defense Fund.
That's great.
Yeah. So that was like, we were like, our goal is 5,000. and that it just went, like, we blew it out of the water. It was incredible. So following that, I think a lot of the Ivy League coaches were like, hey, Kia, great job with that. Which like Kia was supportive, but it wasn't her idea. Like it was like me, Sydney Cummings, and I think it was the two of us that mostly like led it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kia was supportive, but it wasn't her idea. Like it was like, yeah, sure. That was my players, but yeah, thanks, I guess. And they were like, we should do more things in the Ivy League. And Kia was like, I agree. And they're like, so what should we do? And Kia was like, I guess we could have like a justice coalition across, you know, Ivy, like women's soccer teams. So that started at the beginning of the fall semester in 2020. And it still exists today. All 8 women's soccer teams in the Ivy League are a part of it. They meet monthly. We had done some like team education where each team chose a book or a podcast or a movie to you know, educate themselves about like racial injustice and then talked about it as a team. And we wanted to do t-shirts across our team, something about equality, across, you know, women's soccer. The Ivy League said no. And then like fall season, they were like, here's your 8 against hate shirts. And we were like, oh, we had this idea and you said no, but sure, we'll take them. Yeah, so it's been, I don't know, it's been interesting as a student athlete seeing how the side of like people putting barriers and being like, we can't do that, we can't do that, we can't do that. And then as soon as it's like advantageous or
mm-hmm.
as soon as every other league is doing the Black Lives Matter or, you know, shirts, then they're like, oh shoot, we should do that too. Yeah, you guys are right, here's shirts. Yeah, that was a roundabout answer, but
I feel like the subtext a lot of this stuff has been, I guess you've been talking about being a part of like the NCAA system and the very understandable reasons you'd be frustrated with that system. So now that I guess you're kind of outside of that orbit a little bit, I don't know.
Yeah, thank God.
Yes, yes. Is there anything you just want to speak on to explain to people maybe who don't totally get what the NCAA is like as an organization, or just to kind of share your experiences and explain what you think could be improved, things that need to be changed, just your experience, honestly?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think that like what's going on with name, image and likeness is like, I wish I was 4 years younger so I could reap the benefits of that. Cause like for so long, it just sucks. Cause like you're a student athlete, you're doing 20 to 30 hours a week of, I mean, 20 official, like the NCAA, like when you're in season, you can only do 20 hours of sport, but it's like, it ends up being more than that between like travel time and all the things. And then you don't get paid, obviously. And then they use, you know, they use your face to market their games. They use your jersey to sell, you know, to sell jerseys. There's so many like ways in which players are used as like pawns, and you as an athlete, just like hope that you can play at the next level so that you can kind of reap some of that in the future. So I think having like name, image, and likeness rules change to empower athletes can be huge. Unfortunately, I think at the beginning, it's just going to help the like big name football, basketball players. But hopefully it'll like, I mean, I already know that there are like women on my team, women in that play soccer in the NCAA who have small deals with different companies and whatever. So, but there is, besides like the money aspect and like working hard to like, yeah, you want to win obviously as an athlete, but like you're doing the work of a professional athlete almost and not really being paid for it. So besides that piece of it, there's also this, as I think seeing, being a young person playing sports and seeing people like Naomi Osaka, who like use their platform to speak out about injustice, or like Colin Kaepernick, you know, people who have done these things. You don't really realize the restrictions that exist around that, and the limits in which like Colin Kaepernick put his career on the line, and it cost him. And the same can kind of go, like there are limits to what I can do as a student athlete, like to the protests I can do, to whatever I do, because like at the end of the day, I'm representing Brown women's soccer, I'm representing the school of Brown, like, so that, I mean, I'm grateful to be like done with that side of things and be able to you know, kind of engage in protest or whatever, in whatever way I like, but that doesn't, I'm going to play pro, so like it's not done, like I'm still going to represent an organization, there's still going to be repercussions if I'm outspoken about something that they maybe don't agree with, and that's just like the life of an athlete. But I think in the NCAA particularly, when you have not at Ivy Leagues, but when you have scholarships on the line, which are sometimes people's only way of being able to attend that school, it can be quite restrictive.
No, that makes total sense. I'm glad to hear that you're pursuing a professional career, but yeah, I really hope that people understand like different ways of life, like all the struggles that athletes have to go through on all these different levels. And like, I don't know. I just think about like, I've worked as like a cashier at Brown Dining Services. Like I get paid. So I don't know. It just feels ridiculous when you see people working so hard as athletes not getting paid. Right. It's just my thought.
Yeah. And like, I mean, some people would argue that, you know, athletes should make comparable to professional athletes, you know, maybe not, but like, I think for the amount of work that I could make the whatever $11.50 an hour you make as a Brown student employee.
Well, also, it's not like they don't charge members of the community to come watch games. So
right,
making money off of it.
Exactly.
But to get finally more into like some on the field stuff, not that this wasn't really great and informative. Thank you so much.
Of course.
But, you know, Brown women's soccer really started to take off the year that you joined the team. I remember a friend telling me like, oh, the women's soccer team is really good. And I don't know. I feel like I'm just always skeptical. I don't always get my heart broken by Brown sports. I'm like, oh, then I saw you, all of you guys play, but particularly you play. And I'm like, oh, wow, I see. And things really did improve very quickly. So how was that? How was that journey of all that you guys accomplished on the field in these last couple of years?
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it was a culture change. Like we talked about Kia, you know, I think our what would have been the 2020 season would have been her first full team, as in like she recruited freshmen through seniors. So like the team had been getting better. There's like, they had like their like 500 seasons, right? When she, half the team was hers, half the team was the previous coaches. And it takes some work to build a program up. And part of it was, again, having higher fitness standards, changing the attitudes, changing the team rules around like what we do on our off days and like, you know, rules around drinking and partying and things like that that need to be in place for a team to be successful. So, I mean, it's hard because when I first got here, I mean, the whole time I've been at Brown, people are like, oh, Brown got good when you got here. And it's just it, like, it's definitely not me. I played a role, but so did so many other people. I think there's been a huge culture change in the women's soccer team, you know, starting from Kia, but like really carried out by like those who step into the captain role. Like the captains when I got here were so supportive. Like they had a good range of like super supportive, super good at accountability and just like hardworking. And that I think has made all the difference, as well as like diversity. Like we talked about, like we are by far the most diverse team in the Ivy League. So I think our whole thing we always joke about is like diversity wins, because
definitely. Yeah, I've always felt just watching you guys that like the culture feels so organic. It doesn't feel at all manufactured. You guys always feel like a very much a collective. And it, also the conditioning, I've always felt you guys, it shows like that you guys are working hard, because you guys just have more in the tank than other teams a lot of times. I guess I was wondering if you could talk about any of your favorite moments from this run at Brown.
I think I always, my favorite soccer memory since it's happened has been winning PKs against Monmouth in 2019. Because like that's just a goalkeeper's dream. Like I saved two, we scored our first four, like done. So that, I mean, amazing. And we had, the stands were packed, even though it was like 25 degrees outside. And it was loud, it was fun. Like it was Brown's first trip to the NCAA tournament in whatever 25 years. It was awesome. So I like, that's probably my top soccer memory. I think it's interesting going to an Ivy League, because like, yes, we're good at soccer, but people are also just like super intelligent and have a million other things that they're into, which isn't always the case. A lot of times people are like, yeah, school and soccer. But a lot of Brown student athletes in general are just like, oh, school soccer, and I also play the guitar, or I also have this, you know, interest that I do. And so just, you know, going to other people's like performances and things on the team has been super fun. But we on our road trips, particularly after we win, we'll do riff offs, like Pitch Perfect, where this bus will split in half, and one team will, or one half will start singing a song, and then the other team, the other half is like trying to figure out a song, and then we like riff off back. That's like, I will always remember those like moments. We just, yes, we work hard, and yes, like it can be tough grinding out games and like in bad weather, hard practices. Like there's all these blah moments, but there's also like, we also have a lot of fun together. And I'm not going to remember fitness in 5 years when I think back on Brown. Like I'm going to remember all the times in which we've like sung and danced in the locker room or on buses. And
Definitely do remember that stuff from the short time I was like a high school track athlete.
Good times.
But you keep beating me to my questions. You were talking about how you did pretty well academically at West Virginia. I just was wondering if you had any insights on trying to balance being an Ivy League student with being an Ivy League athlete now that you're at Brown.
Maybe a hot take. I academically don't think that there's like actual classroom learning. Don't think that there's much difference between Ivy Leagues and other schools. Like, sure, the admissions process is harder and it's more selective, but like taking organic chemistry at West Virginia and taking like the biologies and whatever other courses I took at West Virginia, when I took comparable classes here, I wasn't like, oh, now I'm at Brown and this class is now so much harder. Like, those classes are always difficult. Subject matter is difficult. It's always going to be difficult. There are some like discussion based classes that I think are different. Like, I just think that like it's more the types of classes that are offered, and like the learning environment in terms of like discussion based classes. That was the biggest difference for me academically, is like in my English classes, I wasn't discussing anything. It was like, show up. Did you read the book? Okay, write for 45 minutes because your paper is due on Friday or whatever. We didn't spend time in class like discussing anything. So having like more discussion-based classes where like I have to come prepared, come doing the reading and like be able to talk at length about things was about, you know, reading and responding to other people's comments and things like that. That was the biggest difference for me. I think the hard thing with what makes Brown difficult in terms of juggling like being a student athlete and being is that at other school, like at West Virginia, for me, I spent way more time playing soccer than I did at Brown. Like, we hit our 20 hours and then some every single week at West Virginia. Brown, I think, is pretty good at like, we were like 18 to 20 hours every week. But there's so much more pressure to do other things, to be involved in other clubs, to be pursuing internships, to be like, there's like this culture of like overachieving where I think everyone kind of buys into it. So on top of, you know, me, and like, because there's no scholarships and there's no like food provided to athletes, like some people have to have jobs on top of being student athletes. So like, that's where it got difficult for me, was like being playing soccer, keeping up with my classes and having a job or being involved in something else. That's where it got difficult. I think that like the subject matter, the school level is pretty much the same across the board.
That makes a lot of sense. That may be a hot take, but I like it. And I get where you're coming from with a lot of these things. I've had similar experiences. So I guess the only other thing I would think of asking is, you know, we're Brown Sports Convos. We talk about all different kinds of sports. Have you followed, do you regularly follow any sports as well as participate? I don't know. Anything going on?
Yeah, I think most of my, like, my dad watched football growing up. Like, I used to watch the NFL a lot more than I do now. My watching of sports is really guided by what athletes are doing outside of their sport. So, like, I never really watched the WNBA, but after everything that happened in 2020, I was like, wow, these women are dope. Like, they're professional athletes doing this like social justice work. Like, you have Maya Moore, you have like these incredible women that are also just like phenomenal at their sport. And I'm like, I'm gonna tune into that now. So I'm trying to watch the WNBA a little bit more. Tennis sometimes, like same thing with Naomi Osaka and you know, Serena Williams, same thing. And when the NCAA basketball thing happened, you know, with like the women's weight room versus the men's weight room at the tournament, then I watched the whole NCAA women's tournament in basketball. But I don't, as much as I'm a competitive person and like love sport, I don't watch a lot of sport other than like when someone catches my attention in the work they're doing off the field or off the court. And I'm like, let's see what you look like in your sport as well. What sports are you into?
No, that totally makes sense too. I'm into all kinds of sports, honestly. I also got into WNBA this year though. It was really fun. My brother lives in Chicago, so I got really invested in the whole Candace Parker comeback, the whole underdog story with that team.
Nice. Yeah, I think the coolest thing about the WNBA is because like there aren't that many. I mean, like women's soccer and men's soccer, you play on the same pitch, everything's the same, right? But it kind of makes sense. Like there's not a physiological difference, but versus like WNBA, NBA, like there's a physiological, like the dunking, like in the NBA, like pretty much everybody can dunk. And that's like a huge part of the game.
Yeah.
Like people dunk all the time. And the WNBA, it's like so much more rare. So it's like, I like how, because of the differences in like because of physiological differences, like women have evolved a different strategy, which involves like way more teamwork. So I think that women's basketball is much more entertaining than basketball, men's basketball, which is just like one or two stars versus like an entire team.
I've said the same thing. I've said, whenever someone brings up, oh, I miss old school basketball, I'm like, watch the WNBA. Like it,
right.
There, as you said, players really play their positions more, you know, it's more old school tactics. I love the NBA too, but it's more about like teams and how they coexist together and team strategies versus like, I'm like a Brooklyn Nets fan. Like so much of it depends on like how Kevin Durant is doing any given night. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's been a really fun, different experience to watch. And I'm glad to get more people into this.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's an uphill battle. Like getting people involved in women's sports is just like, also tackling misogyny, but but I think the WNBA, I think they're headed up. Seems like more people are watching. Definitely. Super fun to watch.
Just to bring it all together, I guess to finish, I think about being part of women's sports, and I guess also partly the fact that this is like one of the more diverse teams racially too in Ivy League. How does it feel to see, I don't know, all these like girls and women of all ages and, you know, packing the stands every game at Brown Women's Soccer, you know, kind of looking up to you guys as role models. Something I think about, I don't know.
I mean, I never thought about, like, I guess how much that would impact me. I'm like, when I'm in a game, I'm pretty blinders on.
Makes sense.
Yeah, but like because of the way that goalkeepers warm up at Brown, like I have about 15 minutes before the game starts when like my warm-up is done and I'm mostly just like changing my jersey, getting my gloves on, because like I'm warm, there's no need to do anything more, like I'm warm, I'm ready. And before our Penn game this year, I don't know if you went, but it was raining sideways.
Yes.
Yeah, and that was like, you know, we were 5-0 at that 5-0 at that time, and this would have gotten us, you know, a share of the championship, big game, senior night, all the things, but the stands are like at least like right before the game close to empty because the weather was awful, and I'm like eating a bar before and I'm, you know, about to chuck it in the trash, and this like 8-year-old is like, hi Kayla, good luck. And I was like, oh, thanks. And she's like, yeah, my name's Lexi. I come to every game. And I was like, cool. Like, she was so talkative. She's like, yeah. And was just like, yeah, I think you're really good. I play goalkeeper sometimes, but I'm also a forward. And I'm like, awesome. Like that. And then before before our game when we played St. John's, she was like, hey, Kayla. And I was like, hey, Lexi, how's it going? Yeah, I think those, like, having young girls at the game, I'm just like, to know my name and to be like, oh, I love how you play. Like, that is so cool. That is so cool.
That's great to hear. Unfortunately, I think we have to cut this short, but this was such a great conversation. I knew it was going to be great, but this is beyond my wildest expectations. And thank you so much for coming out. We're still the Brown Sports Convos podcast. Not going to lie, like everything in the world, our club is a bit in flux right now, but it was still so great we could do this. And we'll definitely be figuring out what we are and coming to listeners and anyone interested in some form in the future. And just thanks again, Kayla, for everything you brought today.
Yeah, thanks for the questions and your research and interest in all of it. Thank you so much. Thank you.